self-pity. Oh, woe is me. One sip of this fairly slow-acting, emotional intoxicant can lead to distorted perception. Giant mountains mushroom out of tiny little molehills. Problems are magnified and calamities loom on all sides. The drunkenness progresses to the crying stage and the dialogue runs. Nobody loves me. Nobody appreciates me. Nobody cares. Nobody recognizes how hard I try. Everybody is against me. I can't do anything right. I might as well be dead. Set to a mournful tune, these lines are played over and over at a half-dark, gloomy, unswept mental hangout. At the center of self-pity is a half-grown kid having a slobbering, blubbering temper fit at God, self, circumstances, and people. As long as we can keep the drunk tears flowing, he does not have to leave and go out into the light. My absolute, all-time worst character defect. Self-pity. I can just do a second, and then I can start, and I can just feel myself sinking. And the next thing I know, I'm going to be in the pits of depression, not being able to get out of bed because I feel so sorry for me. It's a killer. It's an absolute killer. Not only that, if you wonder, I sponsor a woman and she just wonders why people don't want to be around her. You know, it's just pretty soon you keep that pity pot up long enough and people can't stand it. They literally cannot stand to be around you. And I said, you've got to find a way to get out of that self-pity. Well, I have this, and this. I said, I know, we all have this, and this. But you've got to find a way to be grateful. Or sooner or later, if you don't do something about self-pity, it absolutely will rot your soul. It will rot your soul. Hourly doses of daily gratitude, appreciation, and admission of God's grace. Now, I am 21 years sober. There's probably people in this room that are a lot more sober than that. But I'm here to tell you, at 21 years sober, I still have to write a gratitude list. I am a real alcoholic. I am a real alcoholic, and that means that I have the disease of alcoholism real bad. I need this program today more than I have ever needed it, because if I take a drink of alcohol today, I have so much more to lose than I had 21 years ago. My life is fabulous. I have to sit down and write gratitude lists. I don't like it. It makes me feel stupid. It makes me feel like, let me just ask, has anybody ever had this thought? This is the all-time thought. I oughta be better than this. After being sober this long, I oughta be better than this. Well, if you're 2 years sober, or if you're 21 years sober, that thought doesn't change. I oughta be better than this. So all those little basic things that we did in early sobriety that feel very elementary and all of that stuff still work at 21 years of sobriety. Now, all of you may get much weller than me and not have to do that. But I'm here to tell you that I am a real alcoholic with the real, I have the disease of alcoholism. And if I am allowed to spend any time alone in my head for any length of time, I can get so sick that fast. Now, I wish I had a better message for you guys. I wish I could tell you, hang around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, work as hard as I've worked in this program, do as much service as I've done, and you'll be well. I'm here to tell you what you get is a daily reprieve contingent on your spiritual condition for that day. And if you think that all that work I did last week is going to do anything with today's sobriety, I'm sorry, it won't. So if I did it last week, I have to do it the next day, the next day, the next day. And if I rest 1 minute on my laurels, I am spun off into Never Never Land in a pit of self-pity, intolerant, angry, and depressed. That fast. Now, you may not be as sick as me. You may not have to work as hard as me. You may not need to do as much service as I do. You may not need to sponsor as many people as I do. I need to do that. Not because I'm doing anything for them. I need to do that because I can't spend 1 minute thinking about me. Because if I go into this head, as you've heard in Alcoholics Anonymous, alone, I'm in a terrible neighborhood. I have gone into an area that is danger. Stay out. So, I look for the solution. Stop hanging out in mental dumps. Anybody sat home lately and thought? Great place to spend your day. You want to guarantee a terrible day? Go home and think. We'll just do wonders for you. It's guaranteed to put you on the verge of self-pity, depression, and insanity. Stop keeping company with the bad companions of resentment, fear, and selfishness. Oh, fear, resentment, fear, and selfishness. Wow, that sums up the whole character of an alcoholic. There it is, right there. Don't flirt with self-justification. Self-righteousness will sweet-talk you into a dive. How many times has it been suggested to you that you do something and you justify it away? Find a way to justify not having to take the action. It's a killer. It's a killer. Total absence is hardly possible unless the self-pity trips are replaced with others-centered. What does the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous say? It says, it doesn't say a little thought of others or think of others often. It says constant thought of others. Constant. I don't know if you looked that up lately, but constant means all the time, always, thoughts of others. That tells me I cannot spend time thinking about me. If I spend time thinking about me, I'm in for a long self-pity trip. And for me, if I get into any kind of self-pity, it goes directly, it does not pass go, it does not collect $200 into depression. That's where it goes for me. Substitute daily contacts with a higher power, a group of members for the frequent visit. Substitute daily contacts with a higher power and group members for the frequent visits to the self-pity bars. Do that instead of going to the self-pity bars. And I like to look at it as drinking. If I'll take everything and equate it with my alcoholism, just like I've done with this workshop, it works for me. It may not work for you. But I look at all these things like a drink. Because I think the Big Book of Alcoholics, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, a man is unthinking if he thinks just to be sober is enough. To be without drink is not enough. And I believe it with all my heart. If a man is a son of a bitch and you sober him up, you have a sober son of a bitch. Unless you're willing to take actions to change. It's just the way it is. Resentment. An emotional intoxicant distilled from character defects. guaranteed to impede progress is in steps 3 and 11. Drinking of resentments poisons spiritual progress. Often leads to emotional enslavement to the hated people and things. An effective way to stay drunk on resentments is to bar hop from anger to self-pity to intolerance to jealousy to fear, then home to an unbelievable hangover and depression. As the word resentment means to re-feel. That's what the word means. So what happens when I resent something is I re-feel it and re-feel it and re-feel it and re-feel it. Now, what I might have started out with was just this slight intolerance. But it's the more I talk about it, the more I feel it, the more I carry on about it, the bigger it gets. And that's why the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that resentment is the number one offender. If I cannot be free of resentments, I am certain, I believe the word is, to drink again. Resentments absolutely, absolutely rot the soul. In fact, all these character defects rot the soul. And I don't know what kind of, you know, what kind of sickness you think you have. I truly believe that alcoholism is an illness. It definitely is a disease. I believe that it has a physical component. We can't do anything unless we're physically sober. But I can tell you that for me, I believe what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says. This is a spiritual malady that requires a absolutely rot the soul. In fact, all these character defects rot the soul. And I don't know what kind of, you know, what kind of sickness you think you have. I truly believe that alcoholism is an illness. It definitely is a disease. I believe that it has a physical component. We can't do anything unless we're physically sober. But I can tell you that for me, I believe what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says. This is a spiritual malady that requires a spiritual solution. And you know, when we start working these steps, maybe normal people don't need to go make amends. Maybe they don't need to do the things that we need to do. But people who have as much soul sickness as an alcoholic better do this work, or they are certain to be eaten alive with this soul sickness. It will absolutely, it just eats away. And if you've ever had resentments and those feelings, you know what I'm talking about. It just chews up your soul. And some people have done things in our lives that those acts are unforgivable. But what we have to learn to do is just what we talked about early, is separate those acts from the person and be willing to forgive the person for that unforgivable act. And that's pretty heavy stuff, especially if there are women sitting here who are products of incest and molestation. And when those kind of violations have happened to people, those violations, I'm here to tell you, are unforgivable. Those acts are unforgivable. It's the height of what to be unforgivable. But we must find a way to forgive the person. Either that, or we are the ones who do the dying. Solution. Refuse to let one's serenity be drowned out by happenings that are in themselves unimportant. And that is not always true. Some happenings are very devastating. But what we have to learn to do is forgive the person. But most of the happenings, I would say 99.99% of all the things that we are resentful over do not matter, except in my little head. That's the only where they have any importance. And the whole scheme of things, have you ever had this resentment that was so devastating, it chewed you up, it kept you up nights, you couldn't sleep, you know that feeling? And then a year later, you can't even remember what it was? That's how important most resentment is. A year later, we can't even remember what it was. Nobody can hurt our feelings without our permission. There are no victims. There are no victims, just volunteers. Have you ever been angry for something somebody did to you? And the deal is that you remained there and allowed them to do it? That is not a victim. That is a volunteer. A daily step 10 keeps the system clear of clogged feelings about ourselves and others. I think it is real important that we do just like what the pages, I think it's 83 to 86 somewhere, it's in the 10th and 11th step in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It talks about what we do upon awakening and what we do when we go to bed at night. And if we keep those sheets clean every day, if we just do a checklist every day. Now, one of the things that I have a lot of women that I work with who are really good. They write everything out every night, and there's these checklists around AA, which I love. I would love to say I'm that good, but I'm not. But I do try to take a mental checklist before I go to bed at night. Now, I want to share something. The other day at my work is in a total state of transition, and it's been very difficult for me. And I've been trying to maintain a really good attitude because the company I'm with merged with a bunch of other, God bless you, merged with a lot of other companies. And so there's been a lot of layoffs and a lot of downsizing. And so far I was in a group of 12 people, and now there's three of us, and I'm still there. And it's been really hard to maintain any kind of sense of, I'm in a constant state of fear about it. And I pray about it every day, and I still have this little thing going on. So on Thursday, this other company, and of course all these different companies are really territorial because they want to be left the top dog when all this merger finishes. So this lady and my boss is laying in a hospital in Thousand Oaks from back surgery and a full body cast. And he's a great man. After the other lady is amazing, God put this beautiful man, and he's wonderful, and he's our boss. And so he has looked to these three women that work for him to do all the stuff, and I happen to be a hospital contractor. And so this lady is wanting to do all these contracts. And so I was negotiating with this person, and I said, well, you know, I'm not going to do a contract with you right now, because she wanted some really high rates. I said, you know, by the time we all merge and we come together, then, you know, maybe you'll be more flexible about your rates when you have all these other lives to deal with when it's one company. And this other lady says, you're not to say that at all. That's just, you're not supposed to let anybody know that this is happening, and yada, yada, yada. I went home Thursday night, I couldn't sleep. Oh my God, I'm going to lose my job. What have I done to my boss? I've really put him on the edge. All of this stuff. Then I talk to this corporate weenie on Friday, and I tell him how sorry I am I did that. I said, I should not have done that. I put Ron on the spot, da, 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 da. And he says, Polly, it is common knowledge that this is what is happening. I think that's outstanding contracting strategy. I said, but see, what I did is I let my low self-worth and this woman's intimidation make me feel bad, because it was all about me. Me, 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 more about me. I didn't even realize that she was trying to protect her territory, and I was just, it had nothing to do with me. But I was just, all night long, I'm just all about me, all about me, all about me. I had such an askewed perception of what was going on, it was ridiculous. All because I had my eyes on me. I did not even begin to look at the big picture. And that's the kind of stuff that is all, but because I have been taught in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to come clean immediately, I did. And by doing that, I was able to be set straight by this individual. Thank God you've taught me to do that. because if not, I'd still be stewing about it, and I'd still be scared. But because I was taught to, when I feel like I'm wrong, to make amends immediately, I couldn't wait to get to work to call that man. And thank God I go to work at 7 and he's on the East Coast, so I had no problem. I could call him immediately. And I felt like that was a gift. So do your checks and balances, because it will set you free. And 9 times out of 10, what I think is a problem isn't the problem at all. Because I'm always seeing the problem because of how it affects me. And if I will just see the problem from somebody else's eyes and look at the big picture, it's amazing. 9 times out of 10, it has nothing to do with me. Jealousy. A powerful concoction of resentment, fear, self-pity, low self-esteem, and insecurity. Drinking freely and often from jealousy allows one to lose self-control. The mental blend diminishes peace of mind, dangerously threatens faith and trust in self and others. Jealousy brought into the program hurts the group, unity, and fellowship. There is what has destroyed, ripped apart, and has caused groups to break up, marriages to break up, relationships to dissolve, ever any more than jealousy? I had a lot of problems with jealousy. I think one of the beautiful things of marriage is that in marriage, it is amazing at the character defects that decide to surface. And Dottie says they surface so the love can heal them, because that's where the all-time love is in that intimate relationship. And what I had was jealousy. Now, I'm a very blessed woman, but everything is a yin and a yang, right? It's got a good side and a bad side. I sponsor a lot of women. They are beautiful. They are younger than me, most of them. They are thinner than me, most of them. And my husband adores them. Dave is not even really a man. It's like, here I am, he's a man. I didn't mean to say it like that. Dave doesn't like relationships with men as much as he does women. That's what I meant to say. Yet, here I'm married to this man who would be categorized as a man's man. This man is like, drives a pickup truck full of backpacking equipment, rock climbing gear, all this kind of stuff that I just am delighted he loves to do all that. But I don't want to do it. It skins your knees and it breaks your fingernails and ugh. And here is this guy that's just would be considered that, you know, that kind of a man. Yet Dave has much more intimate relationships with women. He talks with women easier. He likes to be around women more than he does men. And he adores the women I sponsor. Just absolutely loves them to pieces. And they like him pretty good too. And now here's my thinking. Well, if I think he's the best man in Alcoholics Anonymous, then other women think so too. And I used to do things like confront him about it, say things, and finally, thank God, Dave has a sense of good self-worth. Because he sat me down and he said, Polly, I am really sorry that my relationships with these other women disturb you. I really wish that were not the case. But I am not about to give up any of my relationships with anybody in order to make you feel better. Thank God, because if he would have allowed me to manipulate him into that, I would have never been satisfied. Nothing he ever did would have been enough. And he would have lost out, and so would these other women. And what I've learned about Dave, and it's really wonderful, from the mouths of babes. My son James was maybe 6 months sober. This is kind of back to that thing I was talking about when Danny was 5 years sober, and I'm sitting here thinking, where in the big book is all of this? And I started going around the country telling everybody they need to get that set of tapes. And that's how I met her. She calls up and she says, this is Danny Fontenot. We were for something. Was going, Danny Fontenot, yes! I've been touched. She says, I know, I've heard. I was so impressed. And again, it's from these younger, from the people. You know, it's like, I think there was, I think the master said that, you know, listen, we can learn. We can learn from the little children. And I think that's why in California we call them babies. I don't know what you call them out here. Sponsees, pigeons, whatever. California we call them babies. And we say that that's why, you know, that's, we come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and we're babies. And we grow up. At any rate, It's been that kind of thing that I've learned from. And my son was about 6 months sober, and one of the women that I sponsor, and her name is Karen, and Dave adores Karen, helped her buy her car, doing all these kind of things. And James looked at me, and he changed my perception, and he changed me looking at jealousy. And he says, Mom, what you need to see is that Dave sees Karen as a daughter, and you see her as a woman. And that's two different ways to look at it. And it has been different ever since, because that's the truth. Dave's daughter's on the streets of Denver, and he has this really strong parental feeling towards young women. And it's wonderful. And he'll do things like help them do different things. And it's wonderful. And it's a wonderful thing for him. And it's a wonderful thing for them. And I've heard many times women stand up from the podium and say, Dave was the first safe man I ever knew, because I knew he wanted absolutely nothing from me but just to love me, and wanting nothing else. And that was not my experience with men. And you see, had I had it my way with my sickness, I would have deprived them and my husband of a wonderful relationship. And you know, I just hear Sally's words, this is none of your business. This is none of your business. This is none of your business. Because I don't have the big picture. I don't have the big picture. And now today, when I get that feeling, you know that feeling? We all know where, at least for me, I know where it starts. It starts about right here. Then it just starts. It just sort of just triggers my mind. And then those mountains are built out of those molehills. And when I start to get that feeling, I say that's a barometer. I use that as a barometer. Because there is nothing wrong with anybody in my life. Nobody is wrong. Nobody's at fault. That's my barometer that something is wrong with my relationship with God. Because if God and I were in, if I was walking, if I had not for some reason somehow flipped God, just turned him right off, flipped him off is a really good idea, is probably a good way to put it too, because that's, oh, thank you, I don't need you today. I'm doing fine, thank you. Is my indication that this relationship is what needs attention, not any of these other relationships. That's the only relationship that's out of order, because when that relationship is in alignment, I don't have these icky feelings about other people, places, and things. I truly look at that barometer. It's not about anybody, anything, or any place. It is about me and my relationship with God, period. Recovery is possible through daily attention to spiritual needs. The whole problem rests in my relationship with God. Humility, daily injection depresses the residual effects of jealousy. A step four and a step five reveals the exact nature of one's compulsion to this green-eyed monsters. Step six and seven also rout this insidious mind bender. One of the things that I've heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm just sure that all of you are just much more ahead than I am, but I've heard from a lot of speakers that have like my length of sobriety and more, and they're saying that in order to start to really, really see step 6 and 7 at a level to where I am really willing to take a hard look at my dark side, usually doesn't happen. It usually happens between years 15 and 20. And I definitely understand that. I have more of an understanding and appreciation today of steps 6 and 7. And see, those steps look like such little steps. Those really insidious character defects. And that's not always true. I know there's people, I work with women who are just bases ahead of wherever I was at their length of sobriety. And I'm just so grateful that I just see people growing faster in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love it. And I think it's because we do more things like this, and because I didn't really start doing things like this until I was probably 10 years sober. I mean, I'm sure they were around, but for some reason I just didn't see about it. But I didn't hear about it. But these are the kinds of things that help us to continue to grow. Dishonesty and self-deception. Denial, delusion, all of the things that we try to hide from the truth. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is really clear about anybody can recover if we're willing to be rigorously honest. And you know, that honesty is, I used to think it was about cash register honesty, and it's about being willing to take a look. And you call it whatever you want to. I always talk about, I always feel like that we have a dark side. And the only way that I can bring any light to my dark side is to talk about it, and that brings it out in the light. But it's so hard to do because it requires me to be so vulnerable to somebody else. It is very, very difficult for me to admit that at a really gut level, honest level. Emotional intoxicants, which like champagne, seem harmless, are subtly laced with rationalization and equivocation. I can't ever say that word. Indulgence in this pair of defects can cause one to cross over into crippling self-deceit with the greatest of ease. Their side effects make us feel sure we are not the maker of our own mischief. If we work it hard enough in our mind, we can always make it not our fault. If I work at it long enough and hard enough, I can finally convince myself. I was listening to a talk radio show the other day, and I happened to be of the belief, like I believe 99.9% of California is, that O.J. Simpson killed those people. And I was listening to this psychologist on the newscast who was talking, says, if you tell yourself a lie long enough, you'll believe it. And that psychologist says, there is no doubt in my mind today that I believe that O.J. Simpson believes he didn't do it. And I believe that because I've been there, certainly not to that degree. I think that's the only Ten Commandment I have never broken. And that's, I didn't kill somebody. I have done all the others to the max. But I haven't killed anybody. But if I had, I'm sure that I could make myself believe I didn't do it. Or absolutely make myself so justified in doing it that it would have been okay and they needed killing. Have you ever heard that? They just need killing. So I could have convinced myself it was okay. Their side effects make us feel sure we are not the maker of our own mischief. We cannot understand why our friends' benefits from the program are not coming to us as we see them coming to others. We cannot give up our secret flirtation with this pair of faults until we are brought painfully to a bottom, facing yet another surrender. Last night after the meeting, a few of us were sitting around here talking, and Chuck Chamberlain was one of my favorite teachers. And every tape I could ever get, I got, and everything he did, I got, because he was just such a wonderful teacher. And he used to say, life is just a sequence of surrenders. But you have to have the first one before you can have the second, the third, or the fourth. Now, if I think for a minute that I stand here, 57 years old, 21 years sober, and I think I have arrived, and I'm not going to have any more surrenders, I am standing in a total state of delusion. Because life is life. That's all it is. It's life. And all of us are going to have a lot of surrenders. And some of them are extremely painful. I sponsor a woman who has 6 months ago lost her second child to death. Talk about out of the order of life. One child is beyond anything I can't even imagine. I have been so devastated with my child trying to take his life. I can't even imagine losing one child, let alone two. And because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you ought to watch Donna walk. It's amazing. It's incredible. The things that have happened as a result of this. An incredible phenomenon called Alcoholics Anonymous. Solution. Recuperation from the DTs of dishonesty and self-deception requires accepting responsibility for these faults. We stop manipulating ourselves and others. There's a line in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I may have quoted it already today, but it describes me. Manipulation through kindness. Just be so nice that people just don't know how evil you really are. We must treat the spiritual malady with rigor. There's that word again. Spiritual malady. That's out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how Bill described this disease, as a spiritual malady. With rigorous honesty, a noticeable change brought about by a meticulous application of the 12 steps to our lives. There again it goes. If you're not a stepper, better start doing the steps. I don't know any other way to recover from a spiritual malady other than a spiritual solution, and the spiritual solution that I know is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Criticism. A social cocktail made with equal parts of rumor, gossip, and secret glee over others' misfortune. It feels so good to smugly say, poor thing. The accompanying hors d'oeuvres of self-righteousness is too good to resist. Such behavior hurts and humiliates others and can, especially in the case of newcomers, drive them away. They have come to Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon in good faith and can be driven away believing these programs are not special after all. And I'm telling you, there's something that I think is real important. I've said this, I think to be sober is a responsibility. I think that this program is a program of attraction. But I cannot think of anything more unattractive as to go into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as if I was a newcomer and listen to people yabbing and jabbing other people. I cannot imagine anything that would be more unattractive than that. Because I don't know what kind of alcoholic you are, but I have this feeling inside of me. I don't think gossip is funny at all. I don't think it's fun because I'm the kind of person, I take a real standoff. It's the minute I hear somebody talking about somebody else, my feeling is if they can talk about somebody else, then they'll talk about me. Because I don't believe that I would be special. I believe that if there are people who need to do that, then they will talk about me. And what I do is I practice the principles in this program. I'm principled to them. I act kind to them. I do what this program says for me to do. But I guarantee you, I don't tell them anything I don't want everybody to know. And if I do, let me tell you something. To take yourself out of a self-pity position, if you've been in that position, if I do, that's not their fault. That's my fault. I already knew what they were going to do. And to have the illusion that my case is different, just like alcoholism, but wait a minute, my case is different. My case isn't different. If they'll talk about others, they'll talk about me. And I believe that from the bottom of my heart. I try never to talk about anybody. If I'm going to say any little jabbies about anybody, I try to make sure they're present so that they know I don't talk about people behind their back. And I can tell you why. And there is nothing I don't believe more painful than to have had it happen to you. And I have had it happen many times. And somebody who I respect a lot in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous one time said, Polly, if you're going to be willing to rock up front, you're going to have to be willing to be kicked in the back. And I'm willing today, but there's nothing that feels worse. Because everybody is not going to agree with me. Everybody is not going to think what I'm doing is okay. And what I have to be willing to do is just not participate in that in any way and just know that what they think of me is none of my business. But I try to make it a point not to talk about others because I also have the spiritual belief that if I send out into the universe negative thoughts about you, then the universe manifests itself tenfold. And those will come back to me 10 times. So every time I send out positive energy, it manifests and comes back 10 times. If I send out negative energy, it manifests in the universe and comes back 10 times. So if I want positives, I give positives. It's very simple. And it's one more time the same thing. It's not about them. It's about me and what I do and what kind of actions I take. The accompanying are such behavior hurts and humiliates others and can especially, in the case of a newcomer, drive them away. And I believe that's the thing that we have. We need to maintain a safe place for new people to come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. They have come to Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon in good faith and can be driven away believing these programs are not special for all. Solution: we need to read the directions on our own prescription. Doesn't it say we should pay attention to our own needs for recovery? The ODAT says on page 92, the contented, does everybody know what the ODAT is? The ODAT is the Al-Anon one day at a time. I'm sorry, those of you who have not discovered the wonderful rooms of Al-Anon, that the ODAD is their like daily reading, that kind of like our 24-hour book. The contented, well-adjusted person has no need to look for flaws in others. Isn't that amazing? When you're feeling good about yourself, do you need to cut anybody else down? Isn't that amazing? But just get a little, you know, just get feeling bad about yourself and what makes you feel better than anything else. To just take a total jab at somebody. So I always try to remember, if somebody's having to cut me down, it's because at that day, it's just my turn in the barrel, and they're not feeling good about themselves, and it doesn't have anything to do with me. But it still doesn't feel good. Alcoholics and Al-Anon are fellowships of equals. Neither brains, money, looks, prestige, education, cleverness, nor the lack of these kept alcoholism and its effects away from us. Daily cultivate love that looks for nothing in return and meditate on our good fortune to enjoy the free gift of God's grace. I'm going to try to get through these. I don't know if we will. I think we will before lunch. Fear. A few slugs of this emotional distress sends us off into a fit of destructive energy that can disrupt home, family, self, and affairs before sanity is restored. Spiritual progress is paralyzed, and the demons move into our psyche where they live rent-free until driven out. Fear. What does the book say? We're people who are driven by 100 forms of fear. And when Bill has the inventory of the four columns, well, we see the three. The fourth column is the page later. But he talks about fear is always the undercausing cause of all of our character defects. Solution, faith. As fear drains away, it is replaced with faith, the inner knowledge that God is in charge. Therefore, all is well. Fear can erode our faith if we are slack about our commitment, and we must remember, faith and fear cannot coexist. A choice must be made. The Odette says, we realize peace of mind does not depend on conditions outside of us, but those inside of us. Again, it's about us. Depression. A definite emotional downer. You ever been around people or sponsored people who are depressed? You know what my gift is in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous? To be blessed with tons of women who are depressed. We attract what we are. And, you know, sometimes I just want to grab them by the neck of the front of their shirt and say, will you please stop? And I'm sure that people wanted to do that to me. Depression plunges one into an abyss of remorse, regret, and rejection. We float around in eternal hell, unable to sense balance or touch solid ground. Our emotional vision is blurred. We cannot see the helping outstretched hand. Our emotional hearing is dull. Have you ever watched somebody who's depressed? And I tell you, my amends and so much shame I've had around being depressed. And that is because so many people have tried to help me and I couldn't see it. And when somebody is into self-pity, that moves into depression, there is not enough. There is not enough love. There's not enough of anything. You just can't do enough because they are so shut off from the sunshine of the Spirit that whatever you do, they can't feel it. They are totally and completely locked away from God. It is a prison. It is a total black prison. We cannot hear words of encouragement and strength. Our emotional touch is deadened, and we cannot feel love. Our emotional taste is that of isolation and melancholy. Our emotional smell is weakened, and we are unable to perceive the essence of harmony and fellowship. The whole being is so drudged by depression that realistic contact with self and others is suspended. Huge, huge sickness. Solution, huge daily doses of attitude of gratitude. I don't know, when I've been in depression, I couldn't find anything to be grateful for. Tough stuff. We need a willingness to surrender this unique pain. Sobriety follows quickly when one can be grateful for pain rather than struggle with it. Thanking God for pain relapses it back into His care. We are saying that we realize we are not perfect enough to manage all our affairs, and that we recognize also His principles provide us with protection and guidance. Gratitude brings release. Release brings experience. Experience brings hope. Hope brings faith. Faith brings freedom from fear. A spiritual awakening takes place, a rebirth occurs, and one is never the same again. I think one of the hardest things in the walk of life is to finally see that those things, that perception, seeing life through a new pair of glasses, of seeing these things which appear to be the very worst thing that could happen to somebody, turns out to be a gift. a gift that will set us on a road to a new happiness and a new freedom. Even though at the time it looked like the very worst thing that could happen to us. And there's a lot of little sayings you hear around, and they're not necessarily, they're not necessarily AA. There are things like make lemonade out of lemons and to see the good and all of those things, and those are the right things, because what happens is gifts are taking place, but because we're so caught up in self, we can't see that we are being set free. Amazing. It's amazing stuff. I've had that in spades the past 5 years and didn't even realize what was happening. Some people have it behind illnesses and pain and all the things that happens to people who have suffered a lot of pain. And through that pain, they have new awarenesses. And I use that because there's a couple of women who've had to learn to live with absolutely severe pain, physical pain. A relentless inventory process must go on in our lives. Now, one of the things that I believe is that I consider step 10 to be an inventory process. I don't know why I would say that, except that the book says that. And it says we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So when you're doing, you know, spot checks inventory, call it anything you like. One of the women I work with was talking about the inventory. She said, well, I did an inventory, and some people say you only need to do one. I said, well, call it what, I mean, all of it is just synonymous. Do call it whatever you want. You know, don't worry about it, because if you didn't do it right in step 4, you can catch up in step 10. I mean, God directed Bill so that we catch all the fallout. I mean, you're always going to be caught, and it's going to be okay. So you don't have to get into the alcoholic perfectionism that, oh, well, I didn't do this, I didn't do that. I mean, the inventory I did, I did one of those Hazleton inventories when I was in treatment. Wonderful things. Make great novels. Do nothing for inventory. You don't get to see your part. That makes you live, you know, in misery for a long time. But at 5 years of sobriety was really when I did my first inventory, 4-column inventory, exactly as it's laid out in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I can assure you that the insight to me is way different than it was when I was 5 years sober. I mean, I'm telling you, those were piddly little character defects. I mean, we had the tip of the tip of the iceberg. The longer I've been sober and we go down deeper is where I get to see those character defects that really want you to throw up. And I'm going to share some of that with you. Huh? Oh, went straight into the solution. Blame. Sorry. Thanks, Vicki. A need to assign blame is an attempt to evade our part in the adventure of life that go wrong. With blame, our defects are assigned to others. And, you know, that's the new psychology term, to assign blame, whatever in the world that means. Assign blame. Please, if you're alcoholic, do not fall into that. If you want to stay miserable all the days of your life, go about assigning blame. Those imperfect, faltering creatures who, although they may mean well, just can't seem to get it together. Poor things. If I can convince myself that my troubles are of your making, I am lured into believing that you are to blame for my misfortunes. The other side of that coin is if my problems really are your fault, I am in real trouble. Because in order for me to grow and get better, I have to get you to change. And then, since I misread and gave you the solution first, how do we get over this? A relentless inventory. Total abstinence from blame brings miracles of tolerance, grace, rich spiritual rewards reflected in a life of real fulfillment. On the ODAT, we can find, most of that which happens to me, good or bad, is self-created. Now, who was talking about, I loved it last night, about the crow? Who was talking about the crow? Yeah, if you're eating crow, you're making your, it's because you made your own meal. Isn't that great? I'm gonna keep remembering that. See, I already lost it. I have a very, my short-term memory has gone. I think that's, is that when you start having senior moments? They say your short-term memory goes first. Oh. Emotional sobriety. Wait, first I want to do, I haven't got this in here. First I want to talk about gossip. I have been inundated with, which what I think is one of the worst of, and we talked a little bit of criticism. But I think criticism is one thing and gossip is another. And I think gossip, if I want to take a gun, just a machine gun, what do you call those guns, a Magnum 4, whatever it is, and just start blowing people away. The best way I can do that is with gossip. Gossip, I think, is one of the most deadly things that we can do to another person. I think that it is something that causes devastation in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it is the farthest thing from spirituality that I can think of. And if I choose to participate in the gossip or do not take any actions in which to stop the gossip, then I am a collaborator in the gossip. And today, I don't want to be involved in that. And it's not that I don't think that people need to share their feelings of hurt. I think that needs to be shared with an AA sponsor. I think everything, every hurt we feel needs to be shared with someone. But I don't think it needs to go any further than that. Because all that's doing is to try to get people to be on my side thinking my way. And that's not what this is about. This is a program of love. And nowhere in gossip is there love. Gossip is a vindictive way to hurt another person. And I just believe that the solution for me is abstinence from gossip, from spreading gossip. Again, I want to reiterate, though, that I think it's very important that we don't hold feelings that we have in, but that we share those with somebody who is going to be emotionally unbiased to what you feel about somebody else, and that way can help give you some direction in how to take care of the gossip. I have seen more destruction in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous behind gossip. I've heard things about people that are totally not true, that have been spread, and by the time, you know, there used to be an exercise, and I don't know if we do it anymore, but when I was in treatment, we did it. And somebody tells somebody a secret, and then you pass the secret on around, and then when you get to the end of the circle, you tell the secret, and it doesn't even resemble what was said before it went around. That's gossip. And what happens is that people are destroyed from that gossip. So for me today, I need to be really mindful that the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous do not have any place for gossip. And that's just, you know, and I think the thing that I need to practice in order to stay away from gossip is a lot of tolerance. Again, what is our code? Love and tolerance. And I need to practice love and tolerance and not be willing to hurt another person because of my opinion. And really, that's what gossip is. You hear a set of information. How do you repeat it, though, with your little slant on it? By the time I get through with gossip, it's really It's got a whole nother, I mean, my kids accuse me of being someone who exaggerates. By the time I get through with it, it's got a whole new dimension to it. I have finally learned what exaggeration is. Ball face lying. Emotional sobriety enables us to carry heavy emotional burdens with relative ease. The more gentle the environment, the less need we feel for self-protection. The more threatening the environment to our feeling of well-being, the greater the timidity and need for self-protection. Our altered perception of reality due to our exposure to the disease of alcoholism can be a tremendous obstacle to emotional growth. Always remember that we are people who suffer from a disease of perception. We are people who have an altered view of reality. My perception of reality is distorted. And I don't know about you, but I've been here 21 years, and I need you. I need to suit up and show up to these meetings. I need to do these retreats. I need to be around you people because my perception of reality is distorted. I need you to keep me in touch with reality. If I didn't have you, I could just spin off onto nowhere. And, you know, one of the things that I've heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know, you can just be so spiritual that you're just of no good to anybody. You know, we need to have our feet firmly planted on the ground. And I can spin off into Never Never Land that fast. I need this program hauling me back, sitting me in the seat and say, sit down, shut up and listen. Sit down, sit down. Not talking a little thick tongued. Most of us are convinced we had not succeeded in winning the excessive competitiveness found in the affairs of our lives. If we felt we had to succeed, then we were really confused as to why we could not beat alcohol. Either way, we could not get emotionally comfortable. Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon offered a way out of the dilemma. One given to emotional slips has no way of knowing when the compulsion may assert itself. Emotional sobriety isn't a sometime thing. We can recognize that emotional binges are often involuntary, but always forgivable. We begin to recover from emotional vulnerability when we understand and accept emotions instead of fighting them, when we find constructive ways to express feelings, and when we keep our sense of humor. And if you don't have one, get one. Emotional sobriety comes when we accentuate positive emotions. And one of the things that I want to leave that with you is, one time there was a song written, and it said, accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. You remember that? And I think the disease of alcoholism is accentuate the negative, eliminate the positive. And I think what we need to do is begin to laugh about some of the stuff that we do. Laughter is a healer. And, you know, it's like the signs we've seen in AA rooms is that, you know, please God, you know, thank you for letting me laugh, but don't ever let me forget I cried. Because never forgetting that I cried keeps my compassion for the new person or for somebody who's going through. But let's learn to laugh. We can go through some of this stuff and then we can laugh about it. And we can share our experience, strength, and hope. And the book says we are not a glum lot. And we're not. We're just emotional basket cases that have an opportunity to get better. And because of that emotional basket case, you know, I believe what Clancy says. Alcohol was but a symptom to the disease of alcoholism. I have alcoholism real bad. And I have to be willing to face my demons every day. And if I'm not willing to face my demons, I stand a big risk of not ever having a happy life. And today, I may not be tomorrow, but today I'm willing to see the things inside of me that stand in the way of my happiness and freedom. And because I want a good life. I want a good life. But I know that requires me to be honest with myself and most of all, be good to the people about me. And we're going to break for lunch, and we're going to come back, I think, at 3:15. Is that when we're going to resume? And at 3:15, we're going to do steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Hi. Did everybody have a great afternoon?
Yeah.
All right. We're not going to make this like a totally lengthy afternoon because you guys had some time off. I didn't. Wah. So we'll do, you went shopping, yes. But I really appreciate the women who allowed me to visit with them this afternoon. That was really, really special. I've never done that. I said, gosh, I feel like a therapist. Step into my office. So that was great. And I just really appreciate the people that signed up and allowed me to meet with them. That was truly special. What we're going to do today, this afternoon, is we're going to do steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and, well, 8's that, 9's you're going to do it, but so let's just say we're going to do 4 through 8. And what I want to do is participation. I mean, this is going to be something that we'll kind of do together. And just in case you're not real aware of doing inventory, and there is absolutely, now I may be all wet, okay? But in my opinion, I cannot see how anybody knows what their character defects are if they never do any inventory. And so, I've heard it said in Alcoholics Anonymous, well, you can't do a fourth step too early or you'll get drunk. Well, you know, I think Bill and Bob took people through the whole steps in about 5 hours. And some of them were 5 hours sober. So, I mean, I just don't think that old dog will hunt. I just don't think so. That's not the deal. Usually what I do is when I start sponsoring someone, we're probably well into their writing by the first 30 days of sobriety. And that's what I do. Now, what you do is what you do. But I believe in getting people, I mean, I think the steps are what save our lives. So why postpone it? I've never figured that out. I don't know what the postponement is. So what I do is I go through, were any of you here last year with Michael? Okay. I do those same readings that she does in Back to Basic. We go through those readings and for steps 1, 2, and 3. And then we do the reading on 4 and begin the outline on 4 and so on and so forth. Now, if you've got that material, that is exactly the way I do it. And, you know, probably pretty amazing since that's the way I do it. And I did not do that always. I learned that's not the way I did it in my early sobriety. It's the way I do it now. It's a pretty kind of fundamental thing that people take through the steps in the area I am. And different areas do it different ways. It all works. It's, my husband has a saying, there's a lot of roads to San Francisco, but they all get you there. So I don't think there's a right way or wrong way. Those are just the things that I do to bring people through the steps. And then we get into step 4, and it's usually very early in sobriety. So it's not about perfectionism. And then just stay current. Either say you're redoing the steps or you're taking, some people take a yearly inventory, and I think that's great. I personally don't do that. If I had to take a yearly inventory, if I felt like that's what I wanted to do, I would do that. But I do step 10s just like this. This is exactly the way I do my step 10s. And I have done a lot of writing and in the past 5 years about some of the things that I've had. But one of the things I want to share with you, because it was probably very humiliating, and this happened about 4 years ago that I did this inventory. I have this, my little grandson that's deaf, you know, that I was telling you about. Well, he's our firstborn, and he is just so special, and I loved him so much, but he lives in Chicago. And his other grandmother, his maternal grandmother, lives in Chicago. And so I would go see Ryan, and, you know, he just would, you know, he just didn't have that much to do with me. But he's just running to his other grandmother. And I was just having a terrible time. And at the international conference, after I had had the opportunity to even share at one of the meetings, I'm sitting on the porch at our bed and breakfast, and I'm looking at my daughter-in-law, and I'm saying, Ryan hates me. And she looked at me and she says, hate's a pretty strong word. Now, I'm sure that sounds like wonderful recovery. Doesn't that sound like I've really got a handle on this program? And I thought, you know, there's something really wrong with this picture. This is not okay. And so I started to write an inventory. So that was in 1995, 3 years ago. And Barbara was on the list. And I found out, you know, I was resentful at Barbara. Why? Because Ryan loves her more than he loves me. What does that affect? Affects my self-esteem, affect my personal relationships. And then what was my part in it? Well, I found out what my part was in it. I didn't want Ryan to love me. Ryan loved me. I wanted Ryan to love me best. So, it is more will always be revealed. So, those are just some of the things. And, I've already shared this with Jill and Vicki. Now, I have stood up here all afternoon saying all these things of this morning that we needed to do, right? Now, I want to tell you the conversation I had with my husband. I finally got a hold of my husband, and he said, well, Frank is Dave's sponsor, and Frank Honeycutt's, I mean, he's like the man. As far as I'm concerned, he's just a wonderful man. And he said, well, Frank and I are going to go to Leo's church tomorrow to hear him. Frank invited me to go to Leo's church to hear him preach. And I said, you can't do that. You made a commitment to babysit Katie in the morning. And then I'm saying, then I said, well, I'm out of town next weekend. But so, of course, that means he has to take care of Katie next weekend. And I said, well, you can go the following weekend. Dave says, I've had enough of this conversation. I don't want to hear you tell me what to do anymore. Now, I just stood up here all morning, right? It only took me an hour to leave you guys before I had an emotional slip. And then I just had to quickly say, I'm really sorry. What you do is none of my business. I'm really, really sorry. And he said, you know, you just get those people in Louisiana lined up and you just forget me. So, you know, just in case you think that there's any wellness up here that's trying to give you any instruction, that's why I stick with the book and I stick with those other things. So, but the thing about it is that if I acknowledge that and I see what the problem is, I got a shot at being better. But if I don't and I walk in here like everything's great and I do all this great stuff, you guys may walk out of here doing fine and I'm apt to die. So I think it's really important that I always am aware of my shortcomings because that's what's going to keep me better. That is the things that are going to keep me better. If I forget that, I'm in trouble. So I quickly made my amends. And so there. So that's what. Okay. Now, is this on? Can you hear me? Okay. I know you can hear me. I'm just asking her about her tape. This is participation time. We're going to take somebody's problem, and we're going to put it up here on the board, and we're going to do it. And anybody got a resentment? Who has a resentment? Okay, Marsha. Okay, Marsha's son. What's his name?
Ian.
E.
What, I-A-N. God, I don't even know how to spell it. I-A-N. Let's put him down here so we can get in all that. Joe. Ian is a little late. Okay. And so why are you angry? Why are you angry at Joe? Okay, won't take responsibility for pregnancy. Anything else? Sounds like an alcoholic. Anything else? Does he not work?
Doesn't work.
Doesn't work? I don't even know him. Okay, he spends money. That's why he steals. Okay, well, we cannot diagnose anybody else's disease, but based on these facts, it appears that we may have an alcoholic. Okay, now let's see what that affects. Okay, this is your son, right? Our children are an extension of us, right? So it must affect your pride. How about your self-esteem? When he's around, is that, ooh, of course. How about your security? Yeah, he's stealing money. Ambition, does it do anything with your ambition? How about your personal relationships? Probably doesn't affect your sexual relationships unless he's pissing off your boyfriend. Okay. Okay. And personal relationships.